Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. It's another view from the Bland Stands with friend of the program, Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald. Ooh, we have so much to talk about tonight, boys.
Something happened?
First, while you're listening, if maybe you're working or you're getting some stuff done around the house or whatever, go ahead and navigate over to cpbeef.com. That's certified Piedmontese premium Nebraska beef, raised and grazed in the beautiful Sandhills region of the state. You go to cpbeef.com, use the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, COMMONFAN, and get 25% off any eligible item at cpbeef.com. They've got ribeyes, New York strips, fillets, sirloins, flat irons. They've got beef tips, beef stew meat, ground beef, beef bacon, beef brats, all the beef, any and all beef that you could ever want in your life can be found at cpbeef.com. And you can get 25% off this premium Nebraska product using the promo code COMMONFAN. Did you ever think you'd be so fortunate in your life?
Use the promo code. I've been wanting to say this for a while.
25% off.
25% off.
Why pay full price for meat at your local butcher shop? Just go get 25% off. Use the promo
and have it shipped right to your front door.
And there was a big outbreak amongst some of this grocery store beef. So, I mean, you could just save the hassle of worrying about that and just order straight from cpbeef.com.
There you go.
There it is. You know the drill, common fan. cpbeef.com, certified Piedmontese. You can also find it at your local Mercado Butcher Shop in Lincoln or Omaha. Certified Piedmontese, powering the Husker football team and powering the Common Fan Podcast. You can also check out our new-ish website, www.commonfan.co. We went to TS Web Services to build the site for us. Whether you need web development or hosting, they've got you covered. You can trust TS Web Services to take your online presence to the next level. Their team was very responsive and delivered high-quality work. TS Web Services can help improve, redesign, or host your website. Check out tswebservices.com to learn more. Evan, we took a break from talking. Well, you took a break from us, probably is a better way to say. You probably needed a break from us. But we took a break from talking to you during the bye week or the week going into Indiana. So it's been a couple of weeks. In that time, Nebraska has gotten absolutely shellacked by the Indiana Hoosiers, and more recently had one assistant coach in particular give a news conference that wasn't terribly reassuring to Nebraska fans. I want to get into all that. Here's what I've been thinking about since about Sunday, of just about Nebraska football in general. And I think it's fitting that we will look to the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team and the movie Miracle for guidance here. So
sure.
It makes all the sense in the world. So before the Olympics started in 1980, the U.S. Olympic hockey team played an exhibition against the Soviet Union and they lost 10-3. And in the movie, at least, and I'm sure this happened in real life, I always tell myself this stuff always happened exactly like that in real life.
Yep. Same
in the movie, legendary coach Herb Brooks played brilliantly by Kurt Russell, walks by goalie Jim Craig, and he says, "I'm thinking about sitting you down, Jim." And that, and as he's walking out of the locker room, and Jim Craig follows him out, and they get into a little bit of a heated exchange. And so I can't do it all word for word, but Craig says to his coach, he says, "You can't do that, man. That's my net." And Herb Brooks's response is, "They just scored 10 goals, Jim. Right now it's everybody's net." And I have been thinking about that nonstop since Sunday. And the Nebraska football team's performance felt like we just got 10 goals scored on us by the Soviet Union. And it sort of feels like Coach Rhule needs to take the approach of right now it's everybody's net, in the sense that maybe we try some younger guys at different positions. Maybe, and again, this is not, Dylan Raiola is the furthest thing from the problem, but maybe we let Heinrich Harburg have a whole series or lead a whole drive instead of just coming in for one play or two plays. Again, that's not even an indictment on Raiola. It's just like, it feels like we're at this point where the offense has like sort of sputtered more and more every game, but they were able to figure out how to win some of those games. And then suddenly everything fell apart against Indiana. Maybe I'm panicking. Maybe all the fan base is panicking, but Evan, you know, you were at the game. Now it's been a couple of days. You've heard from the coaches. What's your take on where everything stands in Husker Nation right now and how the coaches are thinking about it?
Well, I thought the Tuesday availability, I mean, that was the first time really that we got to hear from anyone other than Matt Rhule. I mean, we briefly heard from a couple of players on Saturday. Nebraska pretty much shut everybody down, which, you know, doesn't feel great when you drive out there 10 hours to cover the team. But we kind of got that reaction, and it was just very somber. You know, it felt like there weren't a ton of answers other than you keep fighting, you go back to the tape. I thought what Matt Rhule said about how do you sort of fight off the emotional side of things is like you have to deal in fact. You have to pour over the tape. The answers are there. That's kind of the approach they're taking, is you can't get caught up in sort of the narratives or the emotions or the surprise of it. I will say, in my time covering the team, that result is right near the top of the most surprising that I can remember, where like I felt like this was going to be a one score game one way or another. We talked a couple weeks ago, it felt like a game that could turn into a shootout, maybe a first to 30 sort of thing. I did not see it go the way that it did. So like one of the first questions to me, and TJ, you kind of lay out like these things that Nebraska could consider. The first thing I wonder is if Nebraska lost 35-7 instead of 56-7, is this the same conversation? Because their approach in the second half when they were down, I think it was 28-7, they went for it deep in Indiana territory. They had the interception that was brought back, and then they scored, and that's what really where it got out of hand. And Matt Rhule said, "Hey, we could have kicked a field goal there," and he said, "You know, maybe I underestimated the power of a closer margin." But I'm curious, like, is this a conversation you guys would entertain if this was a 35-7 game instead of what became the second biggest blowout in their time in the Big Ten?
I think I would feel roughly the same way, because it really didn't. I mean, assuming it looked largely the same, like maybe they could have done a few things. Maybe they didn't turn the ball over a few less times. Maybe they gave up a few fewer touchdowns, if that made sense. But I think the way that, I mean, they were manhandled at the line of scrimmage. It didn't feel like they came out ready to play. Indiana appeared to be so much more ready and better coached and executed so much better. I think it would still be troubling, Evan. Again, I guess maybe if it was 14-7 into the fourth quarter or something, and then it got away from them, maybe that's one thing. But if it looked roughly the same, and if it was 21-7, 28-7 a half, you know, something like that, and then if it looked similar, I think I would still be as concerned and as angry. Sorry, GF, you were going to say something there.
No, I brought it up on our recap pod too. Like, the loss I can handle. It's just the way we lost. That, I mean, I could handle a 28-7 loss. Like, I think my limit was like two scores. I think that was what my threshold there. We lose by two scores. I can handle that. We just had a bad off game, but this was more than that. Anything above that and beyond, I'd still be, yeah, I'm concerned. I can't help it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's the way that it happened. I'm with you guys on that. The gashing run plays that Indiana had, and I mean some of the we talked about this too. Some of the throws that Rourke made to Surratt, it's like our guy was right there. He
Yeah,
just made good
just
plays.
great place.
But I think the run defense was absolutely horrible and shocking. If it was the same and it was 35-7, I'd feel the same way probably.
Isn't it interesting? Like it kind of felt like it was a double whammy for Nebraska in a lot of ways because they didn't just lose, but they lost to a team that did it the way that Nebraska wants to do it, with a lot of precision throws to receivers, with explosive run plays, with a defense that was really sound. And then you could even expand it out and say, okay, Nebraska, maybe they're still building. It's year two, right? And then you look across the way and you say, oh, this is a first-year coach, and this is he's 7-0 in his first 7 games at a place that has had virtually no history of success in like 100 years of football. So like, no matter how you look at it, not only is the frustration there for Nebraska, but you look across the way and you see Indiana doing it quicker and doing it better. And so like, that to me is where a lot of the frustration came from, because you can't point to their situation and say that they're established or they've, there's like, if you lost that way to Ohio State, that's a different conversation than the way that they just lost it to Indiana. So I think that really intensified that conversation too. And like, you look around the Big Ten and you say, why not Nebraska? Northwestern's winning division titles, and Illinois is a ranked team, and Minnesota just beat USC, and Purdue played in a Big Ten title game a couple years ago. Like the idea that Nebraska, with its sellout streak and all of its resources and its tradition, can't have one game or one moment where things come together. Like, I get it. Like, it's totally frustrating.
Absolutely.
This was supposed to be a breakthrough chance where you win a top 25 game, you go to a bowl, and instead you're back to the same old conversations about scheme and coaches and culture.
Learning how
It's
to
just
win.
it's frustrating, right? Like
Yeah.
you
It
guys expected more.
doesn't need to be so elusive. It
No,
can be
it's
that
not
can
that
be
hard.
done.
I did the research a week ago. There have been 104 FBS teams that have beaten a top 25 team since Nebraska's done it.
Holy
Like, like
smokes.
that's just, just
What?
one day where you as a fan base can say, hey, where were you when we beat so and so? Like, that was cool. If it was at home, you stormed the field. If it was away, you had a party. And like, Nebraska just hasn't had that moment or that season. And man, was this just another reminder that Nebraska can't have nice things.
It's TJ's perspective. It's him just staring jealously at Indiana right now. Like, it's an envy thing. Yeah, it's just instead of like, why not us?
It's not even just in the end. It's like insert certain team here
Team,
that's
yeah.
like having a great year or 2 or 3 years in a row, and we're just sitting over here like top 10 in college football revenue and all the resources and everything we've got and the new facilities, and nope, can't do it. Can't
Yeah.
have it.
And it's interesting. It's like, to the point about the way that they lost. I mean, I've been everywhere in the last couple of days, from trust no one, you can't believe anything we've been told, it's all a fallacy, it's all a farce, to hey, this is sports, this is football. Yeah, they didn't come out ready to play. They didn't come out, they didn't hit back when things went poorly, and they kind of snowballed on them. And it's maybe not an implication of anything too. It doesn't have to be an implication of anything. And they're still 5-2, and they're still building and whatever. And the truth is probably somewhere in the middle there. But as a fan, I mean, I think I was nervous about this game. I mean, Indiana's been really good. Cignetti is a proven winner and all those things. But I refuse to believe that Indiana is that much more talented than the Huskers are. And I refuse to believe that they're that much better, frankly, than the Huskers are. They deserve credit. Like, they won and they played well. And like, I'm not, I think we all dismiss them because they're Indiana. Indiana football has been garbage forever. And we need to realize they're not that this year, and we need to give them credit. I don't care if those players came from James Madison or Sisters of the Poor or wherever. Like those are good players, and they have
Yep.
shown it against more than just Nebraska this year.
So
Go ahead, Jeff.
there's two things I've been pondering. I'm curious what you guys think about this because these are one came to me last night when we recorded with the Ohio State podcast was when you look at it from the outside, I think a lot of people think that this game was just a bad game for Nebraska. An anomaly is the word that they were using. Like, oh, they'll bounce back. Don't worry about that. But when you're from the outside looking in, I guess you don't really remember, and we've said this a lot, PTSD. Like the way that we lost brings me back to the dark times of like we know what coach it was, the Pelini era. The games where we win, the games where we probably should, we get our asses handed to us on the games that we maybe would have otherwise have a shot at. Like we just get blown out. And we know how that ended up. That coach is gone now. And I think that does worry a lot of people that are we going to go back to that? Are we going to have to cut ties with another coach, have another divisive firing? I know it's early on, but that's a concern. And the other part of it that I looked at was we argue that before our game, Indiana played a bunch of nobodies, right? That's the way we kind of viewed it. Like they haven't played anybody. Are we a nobody? Like that makes me nervous. Like we struggled with Purdue. We hung on against Rutgers. We did beat UTEP the way you should. But what if Colorado was like our bust out game? That was our peak performance. And what if we're that team? What if we're not as good as we think or thought we were? I freak out. I have
Why don't you
anxiety about this
stop,
thing.
Jeff? Why don't
I'm
you stop
sorry.
right now?
I'm just being realistic. I don't want to be a nobody, damn it. Why? I haven't said it. Why not us? Why can't we just be something for once?
I mean, I
It'd be
do think
great.
it's an open question. It's a fair
Yeah.
question. We don't know the answer to that question right now, right?
Well, we
Right.
know, and it's as hard as ever to win. Like everybody has the resources now. That everyone has the TV money. The portal's open for business. Like there's going to be more parity than ever. And so, like if you're Nebraska, in theory, like you're closer to where you want to be in terms of the CFP because it's 12 teams and because there's so much, vulnerability in those spots like 5 through 20. But the other side of that, and the side that we don't talk about as much, is it also brings up a lot of other schools that Nebraska 10 years ago would have considered to be an automatic win. And so you can talk about the Pelini era and his win in 9 games, but the fact is that was a much different Big Ten climate than what there is right now. At that
Sure.
time, Northwestern was a shell of what it is. Purdue stunk, and they're still not very good, but they're better. Minnesota is a much better team than it was 10 years ago. Certainly Indiana, Rutgers, like those are all teams that have had financial resources pumped in that have been able to level the field through the portal, through NIL. And so like it's just even the field. And so that's the downside of it for Nebraska is you don't even, your floor is lower, not because maybe you're a worse team, but because everybody else is better. And I still think there's sort of this thought process among fans, and even sometimes in the media, we get caught up with this, where you look at the schedule and you say, "Well, Indiana, you're probably going to win that game." Okay, Purdue, you probably—I mean, not really. Again, every year is going to be different. These teams can turn over radically now. It's a lot harder to predict year in and year out. Indiana was picked 17th out of 18 teams by people that cover college football in the Big Ten, and they're going to finish, top three probably. So it's just hard, man. And like that's what Nebraska is going up against, is like a lot of the advantages that it used to have has sort of eroded in this model that they're in. And so it comes down to talent and it comes down to execution. And so like where do you want to start with the conversation about Nebraska? You could do the psychological piece and say, hey, a lot of these guys, and Matt Rhule said it this week, have gone through that sort of here we go again sort of mentality. Or you could talk about it's more of the X's and O's type stuff. I mean, both coordinators on Tuesday, Tony White and Marcus Satterfield, both gave specifics about what they regretted from doing in the game, schematically, play calling wise, philosophically. So like that's what happens when you lose by 49, is you have this sort of reflection over how do we do things? Is this the best way to do things? That maybe you don't have when you lose by 2 or 3 scores. So it's tough, man. There's no guarantee. There's no guaranteed wins, in my opinion, for Nebraska the rest of the way. And not to say that they can't win a handful of games, but Even UCLA, like you look at the result against Rutgers last week, like suddenly they look pretty good. Wisconsin's come on. Iowa's been hit and miss. So like Nebraska can win some of these games, but they're not guaranteed to win any of them.
No, they
To
gotta
that
show up.
point of Indiana being picked to finish 17th and 18th, I talked to a guy from an Indiana podcast, and he said they were the fan base or the whatever the ecosystem there was talking openly about how they could start 6-0, right? About how they had kind of a, like that was possible, and there's a lot of belief from Cignetti in the offseason and whatever. If that was Nebraska, it wouldn't happen, right? Like if
Right.
that was Nebraska,
We did it too. We thought 7-0 going
new
into
coach
Ohio
coming in,
State.
new coach coming in, manageable schedule, a lot of belief in the program. We could go 6-0. And like it feels like that sort of thing never happens for us, right? I want to get to though, Evan, you mentioned the press conference. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. It'll be out Wednesday morning. But the $1.4 million man, Marcus Satterfield, made a lot of news today. Well, there was a lot of chatter on Twitter and some news as well. The big thing was his answer on a question about points per play. And I want to get to that. But here's what something jumped out to me first that just made me furious as a Common fan. And I'm going off of what somebody reported on Twitter. But Nebraska offensive coordinator Marcus Satterfield said he must, quote, get in the mindset that in order to win in the Big Ten, the Huskers must establish the run. It's a lot on me. I have to commit to it. And I think what's frustrating about this, and let's say this too, let's like, especially at these press conferences, most people who are reading these quotes on Twitter and in the news are not listening to the questions. There's usually more context. There's usually more to it. You have to give some grace, right, when you're reading a quote. But it sure sounds like he's like scratching his head and saying 19 games in, gee, I wonder if we should run the ball more in the Big Ten. And that you contrast that with what we know Matt Rhule has said, which is we're going to be a physical team. We're going to be a violent team. We're going to be a ground and pound team. We're going to run for 75 yards in the fourth quarter. They're not calling plays that reflect that. This has come up as a concern in prior weeks. And obviously, they got down against Indiana and whatever, but like Dylan Raiola throwing the ball 44 times and just straight drop back, very little even play action for that matter. Is not going to work. It's not working. And like Raiola's great. He's the future. We've said it 100 times, but you got to help out the true freshman. And whether it's receivers that can't get open or a scheme that's not getting helping them get open, whatever it is, like the straight dropback game is not working. And we've said this a million times as Husker fans, going to long before we had this podcast, gentlemen, that like it's a mindset. We are going to run the ball. And you know how you get to 75 yards in the fourth quarter when you keep smacking people in the chin strap the first three quarters. We never get to that point, right? Like they talk about it. It's not bearing out. It's not playing out. Evan, what did you think about what he said about specifically about commitment to the run?
Yeah, I mean, I get the frustration there. And I asked him a follow-up in that press conference about doing it in the Big Ten specifically. And he said, when the weather gets colder and the wind picks up, like maybe that'll even be more of a factor. But I thought it was interesting.
Lip service.
Sorry.
Sorry.
He said, he was asked, like, is his hesitation for running the ball more a matter of patience? And he said, no, it's more a matter of trust in the approach. And so that comes back to the running backs. That comes back to do they have the right plays that are attacking the right areas that should produce these kind of yards? And yeah, I mean, it does seem like there's a disconnect there between sort of what Matt Rhule's vision is for winning in the Big Ten and what they do. And we've seen hints of it. And Marcus Satterfield, I mean, he's been this guy at South Carolina too, where like I think in his heart of hearts, he wants to be a push the ball downfield sort of guy. Like that's his default setting. And so it's been a challenge in the Big Ten to play more of the time of possession sort of style, protect your defense a little bit, adjust to the elements that you're in, the personnel. And so, yeah, I mean, you've seen them get away from it at times. Last year, it was so hard to judge because they didn't have the quarterback that could execute what they wanted to do, and they were doing option stuff just to try to survive and win games. So, like, if you think back to the beginning of the season, I kind of felt like the jury was totally out on the offense because they were just piecing it together last year with what they had. So, yeah, I mean, this was a time I felt like the evaluation window certainly began this year here, and so some of it's got to be personnel. I think they feel like they're recruiting decently at that position for next year. They have a couple of players coming in. Jamarian Parker and Connor Booth, I think, are two playmaking running backs they feel like could be those explosive play kind of guys. But yeah, certainly when you talk about the formula and how you're going to win this thing, more often than not, maybe with the exception of Purdue, Nebraska really hasn't executed that very well. They just
Does
haven't.
that old, I mean, I guess it's a matter of opinion about what they want to do or what, you know, well, some of it has to do with what Husker fans want, but is that ultimately a reflection on Rule? I mean, you're the boss. Like, can we, like,
Yeah, right. Like, if that's your vision, why is he not trying to deliver your vision? Or why, you know what I mean? Why is there no repercussions for that?
Yeah, I mean, he would say that. He would say, and he said it, put the blame on him. He's the head coach. He has that responsibility. Sometimes, and like, I think this is kind of a discussion you could have as it pertains to a lot of different occupations where, like, if you're the boss and you hire someone that you feel like can do the job, how much do you micromanage maybe or lean in on that versus how much do you let them do their thing until it reaches a point where you have to make a decision. So, like, I think he's always been a head coach who's trusted his assistants, who said, "Hey, if I've hired you, I believe what you can do." And so, I don't, he doesn't really have a history of making changes in season or anything like that. So I know as much as fans are frustrated, I think the way it's going to play out is the season's going to play out and it'll go however it's going to go. And they'll make a decision. And, Nebraska coaches of the past have maybe not the best track record of making assistant changes when they've needed to. I always think about Bill Callahan and the what if he had gotten rid of Kevin Cosgrove in that season before he left, or just other assistant moves that were or weren't made. That'll be something that I think Rule understands he's going to be judged by eventually. But I think as it stands, you still got five more games to go. A lot of things yet to be defined. They could still win, eight games, or they could lose out. Like, that's a pretty wide range of outcomes when you start talking about how you're going to judge this team.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
I'm certainly not saying like they need to fire him right now or anything like that, but yeah, to
Jeff,
your
if you've
point,
been on Twitter lately, many people are saying
man, I know many people are saying it. I'm not one of them. I mean, let it play out, like you said, and finish, there's a lot of time left, a lot of season left, but it's frustrating, and so, you know. You got to get it off your chest. Exercise the demons, so to speak.
And he's got, you said it, Evan, he's got five, Satterfield's got five games to prove that he can be the offensive coordinator here and call plays here. So it'll be interesting. We'll see how it plays out. But yeah, I'm falling into the camp of, I mean, Evan, most of us knew kind of how Satterfield leaned with his offenses in the past. I mean, I guess if Rule wants to say he wants to be ground and pound and run the ball and be tough, I just question it. And I'm not expecting an answer from any of you. I just question why you would even bring him in the first place. If it's just the whole familiarity thing and they work together, like, I don't know. We're asking ourselves a lot of questions these last few days, boys.
And
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're all like, we talked about this before, and if there's Husker fans out there who are listening to this who really firmly believe that they should fire Marcus Satterfield and or Ed Foley for that matter, and they should do it immediately and waste no further time, or I that your frustration is valid. I like I totally feel where that's coming from. I think we're all on the same page. Like, you got to give the guy through his first two full years, right? And that the rule is not going to fire these guys. And we're kind of wasting our breath talking about it, right? And like to Evan's point, maybe they'll shock us all. I don't think they're going to beat Ohio State, but maybe we'll beat UCLA and then
You
maybe we'll
don't
go beat
know that.
USC. Jeff's been out there on that. Like maybe they will end up with 8 wins or 7-5 and then win a bowl game or something. And we'll all be feeling better by the end of the year. Or maybe they won't. But firing coordinators and assistants
Yeah, we've
midway
tried
through the
that.
season, like it's not a sign of a
Haven't we?
healthy
We've tried all
program.
that.
Nope.
I know it rarely makes things better. And so, but I mean, let's be clear. No, sir. Plenty of people have, but we have certainly been critical of Marcus Satterfield going back to the very beginning of this podcast last October. Like we've not, you know, we've had our fair share of criticism of Marcus Satterfield. So I do think by the time this offseason rolls around, we'll see how this season plays out. But Rule, like he may have some tough decisions to make. I want to get to the thing that was making the rounds today more than anything else, Evan. Satterfield during the press conference was asked what he felt like, what his goal was for yards per play, and what he like thought would be good for yards per play for the Huskers, where they wanted to be with yards per play. And let's just take a minute, like for the common fans out there. And I'm not really a data analytics guy. There's so many more analytics that people look at now than we had even 15 or 20 years ago. So just so we're not confusing things, like there's a yards per play metric that people refer to sometimes, which is more of a holistic look at a team's performance. And that has to do with, I think, I probably even screwed up the definition of it, but you basically take an offense's yards per play and you subtract the de how many yards a defense allows per play. And that's something that like odds makers will look at, for instance, to evaluate teams, for instance. I think the question here was more simple. Like, how many yards do you want to average per play on offense, Marcus Satterfield? And I think what was troubling to everyone was his answer indicated that he didn't even know where Nebraska stood on their average yards per play. And then he said somewhere between 4 and 6, I would think we would want to be. But if you dig into that stat at all, like 4.0 yards per play is just about the worst in the country. And 6 yards per play is top 60, but it's not great. The best teams, I think, are up around 7 or 8. I mean, if you think about it, and I think another thing that confuses people is people think, well, if you're getting 4 yards every play, that's you're on track for a first down and you never get off the field. It's not quite that simple. Like you have to think about it as like if you're averaging 4 yards per play, that means some of your plays are 6 or 8 or 10 yards, but some of your plays are 2 or 0 yards. And so
It's
again, just keeping in mind the metric, 4.0 yards per play is one of the worst in the country. So that's bad. And his range of 4 to 6, even the top end of that range would not be particularly good. So that's a lot of verbal diarrhea there, and I'm sorry, but I'm trying to understand, Evan, like, and there are plenty of different metrics and ways that coaching staffs can measure how good they want to be and what they want to be on offense. But like, how concerned should we be that the offensive coordinator at the University of Nebraska didn't even know where Nebraska stood in yards per play, nor did he have any comprehension of where he would like the team to be.
Yeah, and part of actually the end of that exchange, which I wrote about, that wasn't in the video that Nebraska put out because they had already kind of moved on, was somebody then said, "Hey, the leader is Miami, and they have just over 8 yards per play." And so he, as he's walking off, he says, "Well, let's bump it up a couple yards then." So I think he unofficially amended his answer to say, let's make it 6 to 8 after he saw sort of the
While further making it clear, he had no clue what he was talking about. Yeah.
So yes, I see it doesn't look great, but what I'll say is I do think there are examples in sports and certainly in football where your staff or your coordinator is very keyed in on certain stats, right? You can ask a coach, "Hey, what are the stats that mean the most to you? What are the numbers that correlate to success better than others? And so like for example, if you were to ask a baseball coach, if I went up to Will Bolt and said, what batting average, team batting average do you want to have this year? He might not have a clue, because to him, he's thinking about on base percentage and situational hitting and things that are unrelated to that. And so like in football, one of the popular metrics would be yards per point. So like, how far are you having to drive, or how hard are you having to work to score your points? And I think that can be, like, for example, a more indicative number for like how efficient an offense is being. It factors in field position and like, are you being helped by special teams or defense, or are you traveling, long distances on your drives? So like, I do think it's possible that he's focused on other numbers. Maybe that's more time of possession. Maybe that's more of a run pass balance. So it's possible, I think, that the pass yards, or the yards per play, maybe isn't as high on his list. That said, it is a pretty general mainstream number that's available just about anywhere. You would like to have a better sense of what that number is. If you are a running based team, that's a better number than if you're a pass-based team, because it does mean that you're running at a higher average, you're able to control the clock, you're able to move the sticks, that sort of thing. As we've said, I don't know that Nebraska can call itself that kind of a team at this point. So yeah, I mean, it's red meat, I think, for the fans. If you want to view it as a guy who is clueless, like, you can do that, and it will be hard to push back in a ton of different directions. If he made that comment after, say, a 14-7 win over Rutgers, I think people say,
Right,
okay,
exactly.
fine. But because he made it after a 49-point loss at Indiana, that's going to be something that people are already upset with him about, and this is just more fuel to the fire there.
I'm just curious as to who asked that question. Does it seem like it just knocked him off of his comfortability pedestal? Because after that, he was fumbling words. He couldn't think of what to say. I kind of felt bad for him. Me and TJ were talking about it. Like, it got a little bit uncomfortable. Did Kurt Cignetti come in there in like a mustache and ask that question and like just a razzm or something like that? Because it just felt like that came out of nowhere. I'm curious as to who that even was.
Kevin Suits, KATV, asked
Oh,
that
really?
question. Yeah.
Nice, nice. I think that to that point you're making at the end of your comments there, Evan, I think it's part of what's so frustrating for Husker fans. Like we've talked a lot about how we are so committed and devoted, and we've spent so much time and resources focused on Husker football. So there's this feeling of like we don't deserve what happened. We don't deserve to have to sit through a game like the Indiana game, and like they should be better than this.
How
And there's
dare
like,
they?
yeah, but it's also though like there's a different piece of this too, which is we're not dumb football fans. We're smart. Like we're a pretty educated. Well, Jeff, you might be. We're a smart football fan base. We know what we're looking at, right? Like maybe not everybody's an X's and O's person. Not everybody's a data analytics person. But like we can see when the team's like when the head coach says we want to be a good running team, and then the offensive line is getting tossed around and we don't run the ball well. Husker fans are smart enough to see that and smart enough to know that. And so I just think it's doubly infuriating when you take that commitment piece and that devotion piece, and then you see what happens on the field. And then these coaches come up there, and like Satterfield in particular today makes it sound like, like they all say they all had no idea why it happened on Saturday and they didn't see it coming. And then Satterfield gets asked a basic question and doesn't seem to even have it. Like, again, let me step back here. This is where I spiral, and we all spiral. All of these coaches have forgotten more about football than we will ever remember. This isn't like a sitcom where they're sitting there scratching their beards and trying to figure out like what to do next. There's obviously a lot more to it that none of us are seeing. But I personally believe, and I'm also one who thinks that like fans on Twitter of any sports team are like just like, Evan, you and I are Cubs fans. That's also an insane fan base, especially on Twitter. It'll make you lose your mind. But I feel like right now, the Husker fan aggravation with the performance at Indiana and some of the comments after that is well warranted.
It is, yeah. And we haven't talked at all about Ohio State coming up next week, and that's okay. Like, I think what just happened deserves most of the dialogue this week. Like, that's the more fascinating performance than I think what we're going to see in Columbus. But I will say, how they respond is really going to be interesting, because Nebraska's been blown out before, and sometimes that spirals into the rest of the season, and one loss becomes two or three, and they never get over that hangover. From what I've seen in the last year and a half under Matt Rhule, they have built a pretty tough culture in practice, pregame. Like, you can tell that they're embracing kind of the physicality more. You've seen fewer injuries, knock on wood, than you've seen in past years. I think that's related to that. So, like, this to me is a really interesting, like, gut check kind of week. Like, if last week was a heat check for Nebraska's hot start, this week is a gut check to say, okay, what are the guts of this program right now? And I don't think that means they beat Ohio State, but I think that means that you can keep it close into the second half, and I think that means that you can give them fits in different ways, and they're not going to run roughshod all over you. And I think that it means that, you take care of business against UCLA and maybe have a chance to win another game or two. So, like, you think back to a year ago when Michigan came to Lincoln and just humbled Nebraska in every facet. And how did they respond then? They went undefeated in the month of October, and they didn't finish strong, but they responded well in that moment. Is this another example of sort of the culture being in place to where they can do that? Or is, Ohio State going to win 42-3, and this thing suddenly looks exactly like it did a year ago, where they're 5-3 into November, and you're trying to find a way just to win a game to extend your season? That all remains to be seen. That's something I'll be fascinated to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I think I don't expect to win at Ohio State, but I do agree that like they've really got to really like find something to give them some positivity and momentum going into UCLA week and make sure they can just kind of keep the train on the tracks and not have it all completely fall apart. And so hopefully with whatever that means, maybe they're tied after the first quarter, or they're tied at halftime, or they're only down 7 or 10 in the third quarter. Like I'd love to think that they can make it a game. And then also, if you do that, then crazy things happen. And the longer you hang around, then you never know if you're in a position to win in the fourth quarter or whatever. I'm a Husker fan. I'm already talking myself into a win against
Yeah,
Ohio
there you
State
go.
by the end of that sentence.
Didn't even
NIL
take till
era.
Friday.
NIL era. The talent is spread out.
That's
We
right.
are going
That's
to win
right.
this thing. I can't believe
That's
it.
right. But they do like another Indiana like performance is the last thing. Like this team's got it. They got to bounce back at least with some fight, right?
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Well, and I think if you've ever played a sport and you've been on the wrong end of one of those types of beatdowns, like, for most people, that doesn't sit well. Like, for most of us who've competed in anything in our life, you take a beating like that, you're like, God, that was so embarrassing. I can't wait to get back out there to prove to everybody that I don't suck that bad. So, like, I think we've got some of that on our side. And like Evan said, I think the culture is strong enough. I can't see them getting embarrassed like that again. I just can't. I think things have gone too well. And I think for the most part, they're a lot mentally tougher than they have been for the last several years. So.
Let's not make any broad assumptions, all right? When I would get lit up on that kickoff team, I would be just begging to get off the field. Get me the hell out of here. I can't do this anymore.
Jeff, you probably shouldn't have been out there.
You probably shouldn't have been out there in the first place,
You're very
Jeff.
small.
For what it's worth, Ohio State has been stewing over their loss for a week and a half.
Yeah,
That's
long
true
bye
too.
week. Yep.
That's the other thing, is like, I was listening to their press conference today, and they're talking just like Nebraska's talking, except their problems are they lost by 1 point on the road to the now number one team in the country,
Right.
and their CFP odds are down to like 80%. So, like, that's their version of the sky
Not
is
poor
falling.
baby.
But like,
Those poor Buckeye fans.
they've been pissed off for like a week and a half. So it's a really it's not
not ideal time for Nebraska to be
No.
walking into that thing. Like, I think Nebraska could play better and the score could be not 49 points, but I think it could be 30 points, 20, and four touchdowns if Ohio State comes out with something to prove. So, like, that's the other part of it is maybe we don't get sort of that closure piece this week or that like understanding of what this team is, in part because the team they're playing is really, really good. And I think they're really, really motivated right now, too.
Oh, pissed off. Yeah. Let's get Ryan Day fired, guys. Let's make that a reality. Let's do that. Come on, guys.
You know, Mattio, I want to one thing on what you said, Mattio. That's partly why you're exactly right. And I know it's big time. You know, big time college football is a different animal for those of us who, you know, compared to, you know, those of us who played a high school sport or did whatever. But I do. That's kind of why I've not always bought the narrative of like, oh, there's something wrong with the program, or there's something infecting the program, or Colorado was their Super Bowl. Like, athletes don't think like that. You don't
No.
like athletes don't think like you, if you get to put on the pads and play big time college football, I would imagine for the most part, like, you want to bounce back and win the next one, and you're excited to be out there, and it's awesome to get to go to the horseshoe and whatever else. Now, my view on this has changed over time with the Huskers in particular, because I feel like there is something to the idea that you're out there in the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and the game is close, and you do start getting that feeling in the pit of your stomach, like, you know, maybe you're not actively thinking, oh no, we're going to lose, but you're certainly not playing to win. I do
Right,
think
you're
there's something
timid.
to that. And that's like been a problem for the Huskers for a long time. And so every new class of players, you know, sort of, it never, wa we never wash ourselves clean of that feeling. But I don't know. I think sometimes we make too, maybe the way I'll say it is this. I think we make too much of some of these mind games, whether it's, here we go again, which Coach Rhule himself said is a problem. So we'll give that, you know, that's legit. Or this other line of thinking that I've seen out there is like, well, Colorado was their Super Bowl. They expended themselves against Colorado.
I don't buy
That's
that.
garbage. No, you come off a win like that, and you're more excited than ever to play the next one. So like some of this stuff is just fans wrap ourselves around the axle of some of these things that, like, if you've ever played a sport, like at least up to the level of like junior high or high school, you know, that's kind of, you know, not reality.
No, and there, you know, some, and this again, this is mostly on Twitter or X or whatever we're going to call it. I still call it Twitter, by the way. There just seems like there's a lot more Husker fans now that just want to like just wallow in the shit. Like, things are going
Yes.
so bad, I'm gonna just tweet all negative stuff now. Who are we gonna fire? Who's on the short list for new offensive coordinators? Like, eventually I just had to like put it down. Like, I can't
You
do
have
this.
to. You
I
have to.
can't do this. Like, I don't operate that way. I'm a glasses half full optimist kind of guy. That's what I've been since Saturday night. Like, gosh, we got five games left. You know, we just gotta win one of them to get to a bowl game. Maybe we even win two. Like, still a lot to play for. And I don't know. It didn't feel like it used to be that way. I know that people have always been critical of Nebraska's coaches and players, but and maybe it's more exposure now with all the social media and everything, and everything's
Yeah,
so
it's more
instant.
public. You have
And
an
it's like
audience.
everybody wants instant gratification. So it's like, oh, we have to win Saturday, otherwise my life's over. And then it's like, okay, wait a minute. They're playing again next week? Oh, okay.
The problem with social media, Matteo, is 20 years ago when, you know, similar situation, and it's that guy at the bar or that guy at the neighborhood party or whatever, and you're
The
like,
coffee
You
shop.
know, I like this guy, but with the stuff he's saying is kind of out there, and I'm just going to go talk to this other person now. But now that a million of those same people are on Twitter all the time,
Yeah,
right? I mean,
with a
that's the
megaphone.
problem. In your face. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Here's the other interesting thing when you talk about like the frustration. It's interesting to me that Nebraska had this game against Indiana, because Indiana and Nebraska, like, when you talk about Indiana football, that's Nebraska basketball. Like, that's the program that's never done anything, and vice versa, Indiana basketball is Nebraska football. And so, like, if you talk to an Indiana fan, they've been frustrated for years about what the Hoosiers have done with their men's basketball team, because you have this history of success and this level of expectation that you're living up to. And so the football team, totally free of that, is partying like it's 1946, because they're 7-0, and this is uncharted territory for them. And so, like, you think about like Nebraska basketball's run last year. They get to the NCAA tournament. They still haven't won a game, but they have no history there. And so it's fun, and PBA sells out, and everyone's having a good time. And so Indiana basketball has been Nebraska football, where you still have that specter of success, that memory for a lot of us of what the 90s were, and even into the 2000s, that success was. And so, like, when you don't even come close to that, and you have a game like Saturday, where you can't even really talk about a play here or there or a certain matchup, all you can talk about is they were a lot better than Nebraska. And why was that? And nobody really knows. Was it talent? Was it scheme? Was it something else? And I think that's the frustrating thing, is like you lose the ability to talk about a game or have a matchup, and it just becomes this existential, like, philosophical thing about like why aren't we as good as we want to be? And so, like, that's not as fun, right? You
Right.
want to
No.
assume at least a level playing field, and it comes down to a play here or there, and you can predict stuff. This takes a lot of the joy out of that. I think
Oh,
that's
yeah.
somewhere that frustration comes from, is people can't define it, and then on the Saturday they just can't enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
100%
Really well
totally
said.
with you on that.
All right,
I don't know, maybe
gentlemen.
you guys can define it. It's hard to
You
define.
can't. I don't think you can.
Well, the one thing I will say is like, the press conference didn't help today with Satterfield, but we're letting the rest of the team off the hook. I mean, we gave up 56 points in that
Right,
game.
right.
There needs to be, blame
Right.
goes without
Nobody,
everybody.
nobody's complaining about Tony White, even though his defense gave up a lot of those. And you mean we had what, one pick six? Otherwise, it was, the defense gave up seven touchdowns, and offense didn't help him. But nobody's picking on Tony White right now.
Yeah, that's for
No,
sure.
that's right. And they all look, all three took accountability, Coach Rhule and the two coordinators. And look,
A little bit
like
of I am Spartacus. Kind of moment, like everybody's like, it was me. No, it was me. No, it was me. I'm the one to blame.
here's a,
Bunch of stand-up guys, man.
here's where we are,
Gentlemen.
and this is where we always land as the common fans, because we're all glass half full kind of guys, except Jeff. But
Yeah, don't rope me in with you dopes, all
sorry,
right?
sorry.
It's all crumbing. It's the sky is falling, you guys. It's
But
over.
like part of what's great about college football is that college football is so great. So like we have five games left. We can like get ourselves into a miserable ball and complain about every little thing, or let's just enjoy it. Let's
Yeah,
go out like
enjoy the ride.
every single game from now until until we're bowl eligible, we're fighting for bowl eligibility. And then after, let's say we get to bowl eligibility at say the UCLA game, then it's like, okay, let's make like we're six and let's say we're 6-3 at that point, going into USC, Wisconsin, and Iowa. Let's make things interesting.
Yeah.
Let's beat
Seven and
some of
five's
these
there, eight and
seven and
four
five,
still
eight and four.
there.
That's right. That's right. Some of those games are winnable. So, like, I think we can all, and look, it's again to you common fans who are out there who want to lament this. We just spent two shows doing it. So get it all
Then
out
we're
there.
gonna flush it.
Lament,
Yep.
lament. Yeah. Bitch about the coaches. We're going to continue to do that probably. But like at the end of the day, we got, Coach Rhule says we're not going to be victims. So we as fans are not going to be victims either. We're going to flush this stuff. We're going to enjoy it. And like, let's go beat Ohio State. And if that doesn't happen, then let's go beat UCLA. But like, let's enjoy college football, because soon enough, it's going to be dark and cold in February and we'll have no football.
Dark and
And
cold.
all
You'll
we'll
be
have,
longing for
you
these
better have
winter
your booties
games
on because it's all,
cold out there.
all we'll have will be the NBA and a
Oh,
Nebraska
dear
basketball
God.
team that we're praying to God makes it to the big dance till the
I
last
know.
minute. Anyway,
That's true.
whoo,
God, it's dep you're depressing me
all
already.
over the map, all over the map here. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Another fantastic conversation with Evan Bland. Evan, any final thoughts from you?
No, I think you said it well. You only get 12 guaranteed football games a year. So
Exactly.
good, bad, indifferent, like it's a fun event. It brings people together. Whatever emotions attached to that can change considerably, but
Drastically, yeah.
who knows? Nebraska, sometimes like these are the games where like you shoot your shot. Like go to Ohio State and shoot your shot. Nobody expects you to win. Who knows what can happen? These are
Yeah.
guys who are, Nebraska has future NFL players too. So in 2018, nobody expected them to be in that thing until the end, and they were.
Yeah.
So crazier things have happened. Who knows? I hope people enjoy the football, regardless of how it goes.
Yeah.
This will be practice too.
Full circle, TJ. This will be the Husker version of Miracle on Ice. So full circle. This
Oh, I
is
love it.
happening this
So,
weekend. There we go.
G, let's like this will be the last show before the Ohio State game. Let's make clear, Geoff has called this as a win for the Huskers multiple times going back to January.
I just can't back off it now. That's the only
No,
thing
you
that's
got to
stopping me.
stick with that.
I've got to stick with
And you're going to look like a
it.
genius when it happens.
I'm in too deep.
That's right. That's right. Reminder, I forgot to bring it up at the beginning again.
I
Common
knew
Fan
it.
Damn
Tailgate,
it.
November 2nd, UCLA game, Lot 10. We're going to try to be in the northwest corner of Lot 10. Everybody come have a beer or a burger or a brat or all of the above with the Common fans. We'd love to meet you and say hi. Evan, thanks as always.
Thank you guys.
Enjoy the trip to Columbus.
Can't wait. It's going to be a flight. It's not going to be a 10-hour drive to
Oh,
Indiana.
nice. All
It's an
right. Very
improvement
nice.
already.
There you go. Taking the World Herald plane to Columbus.
The World Herald
Yeah,
private
private
jet.
flight. Yep. It's I'll be flying the plane. It'll be great.
Love it. Love it. Well, glad I'm not on that plane. All right, Common fans. We'll be back at you after the Ohio State game. Everybody get ready to roll. We're going to take down the number whatever team in the country they are this week. All right. Four, number
Four.
four. All right.
Thank you, Evan.
Yep.
All right. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.